We are in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 17. As we have been looking, Solomon, after wasting much of his life compromising with idolatry, living for all the wrong things, really backslidden is the word we would use for that person who's drifted away from God and the pointlessness of life. You know, for the person that has never known Christ, the trinkets of this world can keep them occupied. But once you've known him and you backslide, the world holds nothing for you. This book really should have an impact on us as believers to know there's nothing out there for you. There's absolutely nothing in the world. All the things that once brought you pleasure, you'll just find, as Solomon did, to be complete emptiness. And for those who don't know the Lord, if they'll really stop and think, they would realize this perspective that Solomon gives really is an accurate one of the world. He begins with meaningless, meaningless, or vanity, vanity. Everything is vanity. Everything is empty. Things are without depth or meaning. And he went on from there to talk about the endless cycle of life. Generations come and go. The rivers keep flowing. The repetition of things. So often I hear people say, well, it just seems like I'm going in a circle. Same things just keep coming around over and over again. And life is a lot that way. The endless repetition of things. And he talks about that affecting him and how that is vanity. Talks about that there's nothing really new under the sun. That, you know, he said, can anybody show me something and say, this is absolutely new? And I know you might say, microwave ovens. You know what? They cook. People have been cooking for a long time. It's nothing new. And if you've used them as often as I do, you discover they can turn a very nice cut of meat into rubber. You know? I mean, you know, they can do some interesting things to food. And you know, I'm not so sure it's a good thing. And then he told us that he gave himself to the pursuit of knowledge and wisdom and pursued understanding everything that's done. And remember this overriding thing that he says in this book, under the sun, that which is done under the sun. And he gave himself over to knowledge. And what he came to a conclusion with knowledge and wisdom is that with more wisdom came more grief, and with more knowledge came more sorrow. You know, I have to admit that there are times in my life when I think back to simpler days when Debbie and I were just poor. It was just her and I. The biggest problem we had was trying to figure out where to get a little firewood to stay warm that night. We lived on a 50-acre ranch, and we had everybody we knew saving newspapers for us because we couldn't afford firewood. And, you know, so we'd sit in the evening rolling up newspaper, putting wire around it and burning it in a potbelly stove to stay warm. And there's times when I think back to how simple life was and how little I knew back then. You know, God has opened up horizons to me and put me in a larger place than I ever thought he would. But I have to admit, there's times when I almost wish it could just be simple again. Just her and I in a small world, just, you know. But yet I wouldn't go back because of all the good things that I've seen God do. But I can understand what he's saying. That with more wisdom comes grief, and with more knowledge comes sorrow. Because I've seen so many things that have broken my heart, being a pastor over the last 20 years or 20 plus years, that there's times I just wish I didn't know everything I knew and you know, hadn't been involved in all that I've had to have been involved in. And then Solomon went on to say, I'm going to do an experiment. I'm going to test myself with pleasure, with mirth. And he gave himself over to what you might call the good life, building big houses, finest food, finest wine, eating the best of the best, and just living satisfying. He said, I didn't deny myself anything I wanted. If I saw it, I wanted it, I bought it, and I experienced it. And he said, this too is vanity. He said, it's just vanity and vexation. It just leaves you empty. And, you know, and then he contemplated after giving himself over to pleasure. He brings up the fact that, you know, he considered the difference between the wise and the fool. And he said that wisdom is better than folly. And yet, you know, no matter how wise a person is, he dies just like the fool. You know, there's this one thing out there that's unavoidable, death. It gets us. From dust thou art, and to dust thou shalt return. And no matter how wisely you live your life, you can't avoid it. It's going to seek you out and get you sooner or later. You're going to leave this planet. And when he thought about all these things, you know, well, what's the benefit of having all this wisdom if it just brings grief? What's the benefit of being a king and having every pleasure that a person could name right there at your fingertips and to be able to have anything you want? And then we pick up now in chapter 2 and verse 17. He says, therefore, I hated life because the work that is done under the sun is grievous to me. For all is vanity and vexation of spirit. Yes, I hated all my labor, which I had taken under the sun, because I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. And who knows whether he'll be a wise or a fool? Yet shall he have rule over all my labor, wherein I have labored, and wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. Therefore, I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and in equity. Yet to a man that has not labored therein shall he leave it for his portion. This is vanity and a great evil. For what has man of all his labor and of the vexation of his heart wherein he has labored under the sun? For all his days are sorrows and his travail and grief, yea, his heart takes not rest in the night. And there is also, this also is vanity. There is nothing better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good of in his labor. This also I saw that it was from the hand of God. For who can eat or else can hasten more than I? And I'll get into that verse a little later. It says, for God gives to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy, but to the sinner he gives travail to gather up, to heap up, that he may give unto him that is good before God. This also is vanity and vexation. You work, you labor, you invest, pour your life into something, and in the end, you die and somebody else takes it over. And what good is it all? You know, I've thought, you know, how many pastors have come and poured their whole heart into a church and invested their entire existence only to have the person who takes over after them destroy it. You know, have the whole thing fall apart later or whatever. It's just, you know, he's just saying, as I look at this whole scene, it's just vanity, it's vexation, just filled with this stuff. He hated life. And if we don't watch out, we lose our perspective and we forget that we have reason and purpose to exist and live. That we are not limited to under the sun. But as Christians, and I can speak for myself, there have been many times in my Christian experience when I'm looking under the sun for satisfaction. When my eyes have gone to the wrong place, I'm looking for the wrong things. And you can get to where you just hate life. He talks about the sorrows and the grief, no rest at night. I've always had a problem sleeping. You know, most people, you know, oh, you know, if your conscience is good, well, I don't know. I grew up in a violent neighborhood. I had a, you know, I just never, I, you know, for me, I slept in the living room most of my life. I didn't have a bedroom when I was growing up. And then I hit the road. I slept under bridges. And by waking up very rapidly and being alert, it saved my life a couple of times. And I've never been able to fully let go and rest. And there's times when I say, oh, God, what I'd give just to be able to sleep really sound. You know, just to really let go and relax and not be aware of my environment. And you just start thinking of your life and going, how many days are filled with hardship compared to how many days are good? Think about it. How many days do we spend laboring in a job that's hard for us? You know, people in this world, they live for the weekend. Oh, you know, the weekend's coming. But they put in, you know, 5 or 6 days a week for this one day that they wait for. And then if their life is anything like mine, only 1 in 10 of your days off turns out good. You know, I mean, it's not that often that even when you plan something good that things go well, and you start realizing life is filled with trials and travail with a few bright moments here and there, and what's the point? I serve Jesus Christ, that's the point. And even in hardship and travail, there's good to be gained from it. There's people to minister to. And even as Christians, we look at our lives and realize how many hours we spend problem solving. I wonder how many of your families are basically just problem solving units. That's about all you do. You solve problems together. You know? Do you wonder why your kids don't want to hang out with you? It's a problem. You know, all that's there is, well, how are you doing on your grades? We got this bill to pay. We got this to take care of. We got to resolve this. We got to accomplish that. We spend so much time with so many tasks and so many burdens. And then we get a little vacation and we, you know, people fly to Hawaii and and then they got to come back. You know, save up for 10 years, you know, and they go over and see paradise and then they're tormented the rest of their life wishing they could go back there again, you know. Oh, man, you know, if I could just get there again, I just wanted to stay on that beach, you know. I mean, it's just, you think about it. And from a perspective of under the sun, how he hits on it and how, you know, eventually death catches up with us. It will, you know, get us no matter how much you invest yourself. It's going to pass out of your control one day. And perhaps to a fool, perhaps to somebody who deserves it, but you won't know. And besides that, whether you're in heaven or not, it won't be a big issue to you once you're off this scene. And the things that seem so important all of a sudden don't anymore. Verse 25, where he said, who can enjoy more than I, or who can eat? The literal, it's a difficult one to translate, but it probably should rather read, for apart from God, who can eat and have enjoyment? Because he says, there's nothing better for us, and we know there's better for serving God, but in our daily lives, that we would be content and enjoy what God has given us. The food that he's given us, that we would eat and enjoy what God has given, be thankful. You know, contentment is a very valuable thing. And he's saying, I've looked all over, I've seen all these things. And who can eat and enjoy anything without God? And you know, it's kind of a realization. He could look at himself as king and go, you know, this poor person over here enjoys his meal more than I do because he's content and he has God there. You know, it's not the quality of the things in our lives. It's our ability to connect with them and give thanks to God and enjoy the good things that he has given us. And that contentedness, I believe, is what he is touching on there, that there's nothing better and it's from God. But in the end, still, even that. Now we go over to chapter 3. It says, to everything there is a season, a time to every purpose under heaven, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck up what is planted, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to break down, and a time to build up, a time to weep, and a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace, a time to refrain from embracing, a time to gain, and a time to lose, a time to keep, and a time to throw away, a time to tear, and a time to sew it back up, a time to keep silence, and a time to speak. That we could learn that one would be good. A time to love, and a time to hate, a time of war, and a time of peace. What profit has the worker from that in which he labors? I have seen the God-given task which the sons of men are to be occupied. A time for everything. Life does tend to come in seasons. I've seen Christians get caught up in thinking seasonally and go too far with it. But let's face it, there are seasons, aren't there? We have seasons where everything breaks. You have those? I mean, it's not just your refrigerator. It's your refrigerator, your car. You know, everything goes at once. You know, we have a season. It's frustrating. Everything you touch just falls apart in your hands. And then you'll have a season that goes relatively smooth. And we have times to laugh and times to cry. And God has assigned seasons. These, and they're unstoppable. There's a time to grieve. There always will be again. It's going to come. And you know, just like the seasons cannot be stopped. You know, I would like to stop the seasons sometimes. I like summer. Okay, let's just eliminate winter altogether, you know. I'll keep spring, fall, you know, keep them short, and mostly summer, you know. I like summer. But it doesn't matter how much, what I like, winter's going to come. Maybe you really like the winter. You know, I hear people say, well, you know, I want to live someplace where there's seasons. We have seasons here. You know, it was down to 72 today, you know. And, you know, it's winter right now. And, you know, the people that I think like seasons, most of the time I hear people say that, it's women. I think it's because they like the clothes, you know. It's going, I wish I could buy that coat, but there's no reason to buy one in California, you know. You can't. But you know, doesn't matter how you feel about the seasons, they come as they will. You can have an Indian summer where it just stretches on and lasts longer, but eventually summer ends and the fall comes and then the winter and then the spring. And you know, he's saying in our lives there are purposes and reasons. There's times for each thing that we have. And they come upon us. And talking about each one of these seasons under the sun, how our lives are lived out. And in verse 11, he says, he has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. I know that nothing is better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives, and also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor. It is the gift of God. I know that whatever God does, it shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it, nothing taken from it. God does it, that men should fear him, fear before him. That which is has already been, and that which is, that okay, this is head twister. That which is has already been, and what is to be has already been, and God requires what is past, or an account of what is past. Now here, he talks about seasons come. And then he says God makes all things beautiful in its time. Not in our time, but in its time. You know, I think a large problem with humanity is that we don't synchronize with the season. We are so often living in yesterday or tomorrow. And when it's a time to grieve, go ahead and grieve. When it's a time to laugh, to laugh. To enjoy it and not waste your days wishing for another season. And God does make all things beautiful. You know, as it says in Romans that, you know, that God is going to work all things together for the good of those who love him. Now, I have to admit to you, I say that verse with total confidence, strictly based on faith, not observation. As I see hardship come into people's lives, so often I don't see the evidence to say, well, here is all the good God did, isn't it worth it? I usually can't see enough. Especially when there's a loss of life of a young child or a baby, you look at that and you just go, how can I tell somebody? You know, and I usually don't resort to these verses with those people. I just tell them that I know that God is good and that he's doing good. But once we get to eternity and look back, we're going to go, you know what? He made all things beautiful. Everything that we went through was worth it. And we need to remind ourselves of that. And it's amazing how Solomon here jumps out, everything beautiful. And as it says in Romans, that we know that God works all things together for the good of them that love God. We know that. In the end, we're going to look back and see the total picture. And we need to learn to synchronize with what's going on in front of us. You know, isn't it interesting when you're a little kid, you want to grow up? When you're a teenager, you want to be older because you want to get your driver's license. Once you get your driver's license, you want to be 21 so you can do other things. Once you're 21, you know, you can't wait to get involved in this career or whatever, wherever your life is going, and then you realize, oh, I want some seniority. And, you know, once you get seniority, you want to be a kid again. You know, we're never content where we're at. We're always wanting something else. You know, age and time just keeps passing by. It just happens. And as we look at our lives, you know, what is it? And he gives us a hint here as to what's going on for humanity apart from a relationship with God. And again, I remind you, you know, what we're driving home here is apart from Christ, under the Son, not for us who know the Son. And can, you know, our lives go well beyond the Son. This Son will burn out, you know, and we'll still be around. You know, God's going to put this whole planet away and make a new one one day. And we're going on forever. And there's purpose and reason for us to live. But listen, it says here that he puts eternity in their hearts. You see, there's something in humanity that drives him on, that does not allow him to settle down with the things in this world. There's nothing under the sun that can answer to that eternal craving that God has put in the heart of people. They try to fit things into it. In fact, some of the worst people we might look at, some of the lowest drug addicts and the people you look at are the great failures. I look at them and go, they've tried so hard to fill that craving for eternity in their heart. That's what they're after. And they've tried one thing after another. You know, the people I pity the most are those that are successful and don't know Christ and are content with it, have somehow eradicated eternity out of their heart. You know, there's something in us, and I believe it's still in us as Christians. Eternity is in my heart. There's something in me that no matter how good things get, I go, you know, this isn't it. There's more. And the wonderful thing to know is that longing in our hearts has a perfect answer in eternity. And eternity has been placed in your heart, a longing for something more, something deeper, something fuller. Once we come to know Christ to a large degree, we find satisfaction that we've discovered eternity. But even as Christians, you know, God has set us up so that we can never turn back and settle down. You know, I shared with you in our last study in Ecclesiastes that I had a neighbor that could be content for a year with an Ugo horn on his car. You know, and just one trinket after another. He didn't have much money, but what little bit he had, he would, you know, do something to his car, and, you know, that would just make him happy for the longest time. And I just looked at that, and I just go, you know, there's nothing like that that even remotely makes me feel good. There's nothing I can buy that I look at and go, oh, this is satisfying. I've got the, you know, when I was younger, I kept thinking, oh, I got to get Krager mags on my car. You know, I got to get this. I got to get that. I got to, you know, all these things. And you're visualizing having them and waiting to get them. And you finally get them. And then you know, then it's just something else comes up, doesn't it? There's something else you need. I can't wait until this. I can't wait until that. A better job, a better this, a better that. And you see, in the end, if we'll sit down and think about it, there's nothing under the sun that will satisfy. Nothing. And the reason is that God put eternity in your heart. C.S. Lewis wrote a book. I don't recommend it a lot, but it's called The Pilgrim's Regress. And it's about a young boy who just has this longing for an island. And in the story, the longing just drives him on, and he goes through a whole sequence of things, and everywhere along the way on his journey, each person would claim, well, we have the answer. The island really isn't, it's not a real island, it's really this. You know, if you'll just come and drink and party with us, you'll discover this is really what the island was about. And he'd try it, but it didn't satisfy. He kept longing for the island. And in this book, there was the landlord's castle, and everybody in the world, basically, the theme of the book was when their lease was up, they had to go, that their life was over. And he remembered everybody being real sad because his uncle's lease was up and he had to go back to the castle. And he wanted to do everything he could to get away from the castle, you know. And the interesting story in that, literally, he goes clear around the world, looking for an answer, and he finally finds the island. But it's only after submitting to him, believing in God and trusting himself to the church. And when he discovers the island, it's just the other side of the landlord's castle, you know. And, you know, with all the legalism and Christianity, the way it's been presented, a lot of people are like, oh, that's not what I want, but I crave this. I have a longing in my heart. What's it for? It's for heaven. You know, we don't see it sometimes. And you know, that longing, that desire, that drive behind us, I know you've felt it, that sweet, piercing longing, a longing that in itself is almost addicting. You almost like the longing more than the having of something. It's a feeling of, oh, you know, that sweetness of something that just passes through your heart like night-blooming jasmine and stirs you and makes you realize, oh, there's something more, but what is it? What is it? Well, we know what it is. It's eternity that he put in our hearts. But he goes on to say, but who can know God's plan from beginning to end? Even though he's put eternity in our hearts, except no one can find out the work of God from beginning to end. Isn't that interesting? Eternity is in my heart, drawing me home. And I believe this is a true statement. None of us knows the work of God beginning to end. And I believe what Solomon's referring here to is not just the totality of everything God's doing, but the work of God in my life. What's he doing with me from beginning to end? Life is still filled with twists and turns and surprises. I think it's going this way and suddenly it's going that. God opens up a door and it seems like, oh, this is exciting. I like going this way. And then all of a sudden, nope, we're going back to Elsinore. I'm going to ground you there for a while, John. You know, okay, well, what's next? And to be content to go, I don't know the plan of God. There are times when we get, there's an old song I remember hearing at one time, driving on a backcountry road in Oregon with a pastor up there, and this back when I was a very young Christian, and he was playing an old-time Christian radio station, and song came on and said, heaven came down and glory floods my soul. And there's times when we have a taste of heaven, isn't there? There's times maybe when we're worshiping God. For me, when that song was playing, I was going fishing with the leader of the group I was part of, and we were heading up into the coastal mountain range there in Oregon, beautiful country, and this song, you know, heaven came down and glory floods my soul. And I just started worshiping the Lord, and oh, that taste of heaven. But you see, when we look at the pattern of our lives, there's a lot missing. I'm convinced a good illustration, if you've looked at the backside of a tapestry, on the front side can be the most beautiful artwork. I've seen something that impacted me was a field trip when I was a kid, and we went to some museum somewhere. I don't even know where it was, but there was this beautiful tapestry, and it was a setting with a king on a throne and people around him and trees, and all the stuff was done on this huge piece of work, and it was incredibly beautiful. But if you went around and looked at the backside of it, you could roughly make out a pattern. You could maybe tell what it was about, but it would just be a bunch of threads running different directions and stuff. And I'm convinced while we're in these bodies, we're seeing the backside of the tapestry that God's making of our lives. You know, we don't see the whole picture. You know, we can see general patterns and go, I see generally what you're doing, but one day we're going to be home with him and look back at what he did with our lives, and we're just going to go, wow. It's going to be breathtaking. But this side of heaven, who can know? We can't figure out the whole plan of God in our lives, what he's going to do. The day will come when we'll do it. And so then he goes back again, where it's nothing better than to be content with what we have. Verse 16. Moreover, I saw under the sun, in the place of judgment, wickedness was there. In the place of righteousness, iniquity was there. And I said in my heart, God shall judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time there for every purpose and for every work. And I said in my heart, concerning the condition of the sons of men, God tests them, that they may see that they themselves are like animals. For what happens to the sons of men also happens to the animals. One thing befalls them. As one dies, so dies the other. Surely, They all have one breath. Man has no advantage over animals. All is vanity. All go to one place. All are from the dust and all return to the dust. Who knows the spirit of the sons of men, which goes upward, and the spirit of the animal, which goes down to the earth? Notice question mark, not statement. He's asking, who knows? Does the spirit of man go up? Animals just turn into dust? Who knows? He says, so I perceive that nothing is better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his heritage, for who can bring him to see what will happen after him? In the place of judgment, there was wickedness. In the place of righteousness, there was iniquity. How many people do you know that reject the thought of a loving God because of the injustice that's where there should have been justice in this world? There is no justice. We know that. We've watched a nation, one of the nations perhaps in all of history that has the best shot at ministering justice, the United States. Throughout all history, I don't think there's been any country like ours where there really is a system, and it's largely based on the Bible. It's a biblical system of witnesses, and you look at the laws that originally were set up. But now here we are, and in the scheme of history, just a mere 200 years later, and what do we see in the seat of justice? Wickedness. We find out men are bribed, they're paid off. You can, if you have enough money for a good lawyer, you can get away with anything. If you're poor, you'll go to jail even if you're innocent. It's a horrible condition. And you know, a nation that cannot give clear justice to its people won't last too long. You know, it's just, it's a horrible plight that we look at. And where we should have expected righteousness, what have we seen? Positions that should have been filled with dignity. And I thank God that we have a president in there that's bringing dignity back to the office, you know, and compared to what has gone on before, you know, with Clinton. I mean, it was a horrible thing. And he's saying, you look, you would expect, I'm looking for righteousness here, but what do I find? Iniquity. I'm coming looking for justice. What do I find? Wickedness. I find out I've been sold out, that there's, that the corruption of sin has gone to the highest levels, and where do I turn? That's been a source of bitterness for many people to say, how could a God of love allow a world like this? Well, we have to remember. And that, you know, we really can't know. And he goes on to say, you know, God's going to deal with this one day. God is going to judge the judges. God is going to judge the leaders. They'll all answer to him one day. And as he goes on talking about the condition of men, he says, you know, everything dies. It's the equalizer. Levels everything out. Happens to all of us. I think I've shared with you about the little girl that showed me about when she got about her third tooth that she lost. You know, she was so excited, the first two, but the third one, she came up and said, I lost another tooth. And she looked at me and said, did you know I'm losing all my teeth? They're all going to fall out. And I'm going, yeah, I know. I felt like saying, but don't worry till they fall out the second time. You know? Ever thought about it? You know, the way we get here is pretty much the way we leave. No teeth, no hair. You know? I mean, if you stick around long enough, you know, and there is something, you know, how a lot of babies, they look so similar, and when you get old, you start looking real similar again, too. You know, everything just kind of, you're getting ready to check out. You know, you get old enough, and everything goes. And you see, death is out there. Now, are we different than animals? Of course we are. God has put eternity in our hearts. But if we're only looking under the sun to the atheist, what do they say? You're just an evolved animal, right? What a horrible way to live. I don't know how people can stand living without knowing Christ, to be honest with you. Because you see, when I read this by Solomon, this is how I felt about life before I was a Christian, is what's the point of all this misery? What is the reason for it? You know, why keep going through this? You know, why not just end it? And as he looks at this, he's saying, no matter how, you know, all these things go on, And yet still people die. And so he goes back again and saying nothing better than to learn to enjoy what you have, the fruit of your labor and what's been given to you. Chapter 4. Then I returned and considered all the oppression that is done under the sun. And look, the tears of the oppressed, but they have no comforter. On the side of their oppressors there is power, but they have no comforter. Therefore I praised the dead who are already dead more than the living who are still alive. Yet better than both is he who's never existed, who has not seen the evil work that is done under the sun. I'd say this guy's pretty depressed, wouldn't you? I looked around and considered the oppression. I don't know how much oppression you've seen. Oppression of the poor. I've been in places where people are truly oppressed. It's heartrending. I mean, as we look around today, I mean, you know, I think all of us have had our eyes open quite a bit recently in the news. I mean, no matter how bad it gets to us, I think a lot of us think, well, I could have been born in Afghanistan. Talk about oppression. Religious oppression is one of the worst. And I've seen oppression in many forms. And it's heartbreaking when you see what people go through. And apart from God, no comforter out in the world. Ah, oh, my heart breaks for women who are oppressed by violent men. The husbands who rule their house. And, you know, I've seen it. I've seen the violence. You know, one day coming into church, I used to come in about 3 in the morning and do all my study and get in my office and do my last preparation and stay down here. And one morning I stopped at Circle K that's out of business now, but pulled in there to get coffee. And I saw a woman standing there, and just at a glance, I knew exactly what's going on. She had a baby in a diaper bag, and she was on the phone. And her face was all bruised up, and there was blood dripping down the side of her mouth. I'm going, I know what's going on here, so I went in and got coffee. I didn't dare approach her, but I just sat in my car and waited for the police to show up. And when the police showed up, I called an officer over, and I just said, I'm a pastor, and I know got a couple hours of reports to do here, but I'm willing to help. I have people, there are no shelters, and, you know, I can get her to a shelter. And you know, they brought her to the church after all of that, and, you know, we got her out of the area. And that was a scary one, though. I mean, you know, she was just a slight, frail woman. You know, not, you know, just she looked like you could break her by, you know, just bumping into her too hard. You know, very delicate looking. And she was beaten bad. And, oh, my heart went out. Oh, God. You know, the ones that have power that use it, you know. And unfortunately, that time, the next day when I was going to drive her down to the shelter, I took her to, she just said, you know what, he's gone and I need to get birth certificates and stuff. And I said, okay, but just the birth certificate now. And I dropped her off, and she went in the house and didn't come back out. So I went in to get her and told her. I said, you know, we can't stay here. And I said, if you don't come out right now, I'm just going to leave without you. I'm not going to stay here and get killed. And she said, okay. So she went out and got jumped in my truck, and right then he showed up. And she locked me out of my truck. And I did a real quick dance around my truck with this guy. And this guy looked like, you know, he dismantled cars with his teeth, you know. I mean, you know, one of these guys, just really big, burly-looking guy, you know. I mean, it looked like he just killed things for fun or something, you know. I mean, you know, just a really mean-looking guy. And I'm not kidding. I was jumping in the bed of my truck, dancing around, and she'd unlock the door, and I'd go to open it and jump in, and she'd panic and lock it on me at the last minute, you know. And finally got out of there. That guy stalked me for a long time. I was scared of that guy. He was big. And I'm not a small man, but I mean, you know, imagine a woman powerless with somebody like that beating on him. And you know what really gets me is when I run into that and it's a Christian husband who says she's supposed to submit. Oh, man, don't even put that in front of me. You don't use Jesus to oppress people, especially your family. There's a lot of husbands who rule their families by fear and oppression. And no, stop it. You know, it just should not be so. And other oppressions I've seen, it breaks your heart. As he said, I turned again and looked at all this evil that's done under the sun. And it's no wonder that from a perspective of only under the sun, he said, it's the people who have never been born are the best off, and the people that are already out of here are better off than the ones that are living. I've never actually lived where somebody had absolute power over me like that. And yet oppression is just that. It's doing injury to somebody. And then he goes on to say, again, in verse 4, I saw for all toil and every skillful work, a man is envied by his neighbor. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. The fool folds his hands and consumes his own flesh. Better a handful with quietness than both hands full together with toil and grasping for the wind. Work of the skillful. He brings us up to a point here where we have someone who is somehow not oppressed, maybe a person who's learning how to be content with the work of their hands, and they're still not free. People are going to envy them. Envy is a horrible thing. Envy, when somebody envies you, it's a blackness in the heart that would deprive somebody of something that you want. An honor perhaps bestowed upon somebody. I think most of us have experienced the black-heartedness of envy long before we got out of elementary school. Some other kid getting something we wished we had, you know. Maybe a kid getting a new bicycle when you didn't get anything at all that Christmas, and you just look at them, and you don't necessarily want their bicycle, but you just wish they didn't have it. And you envy them. See, envy isn't this, you know, there's two ways in English we can look at envy. Envy could be, wow, that person has a great life. You know, look at them. They're a good example. You know, I want to follow in their footsteps. We might use the word that way. But the real word is a black jealousy. In fact, in Proverbs, it says, a sound heart is the life of the flesh, but envy is rottenness to the bones. And in Proverbs 6:34, it says, for jealousy, which is the same word for envy, is the rage of a man. Therefore, he will not be spared in the day of judgment. Proverbs 27:4, wrath is cruel, anger is outrageous, but who can stand before envy? And on the proverb, Solomon wrote, if somebody has wrath towards you, that's bad. If somebody's angry with you, that's bad. But if they envy you, it's worse than the first two. And check this out in Mark 15:10, Jesus, for he knew that the chief priests had delivered him for envy. It was for envy that they killed Christ. So suppose you're just one of those blessed people. Have you ever run into one? Everything seems to go good for them. I've run into a few, not too many here in Elsinore, but, you know. Their life is charmed. You know the ones I'm talking about. Everything just seems to fall into place for them. You know, they just had the right education, grew up in the right neighborhood, had perfect loving parents, and, you know, marry a perfect loving spouse and get the perfect career, and they're just happy. And, you know, good looking, they've just got it all. Well, there's one thing they're going to be lacking, is people are going to envy them. And so kind of what Solomon here is drawing is under the sun, even if you have everything, you've got nothing. What good is it? You're going to be envied. And if you're envied, you're going to be hated. And all those things. And then he talks about the fool folding his hands. So here we have the man who works hard, and, you know, labors, and he's skillful, his life is being blessed, but he gets envied. And then you got the other side. A guy just folds his hands, and he doesn't have anything to enjoy because he's lazy. And not sure if verse 6 ties together that this is the lazy man saying better one hand full with quietness than both hands full. You know, that he's saying that. But it really is true. It's better to have a little with some quiet than to be grasping for the wind and never to be content. And so, as we continue in this book, it's hard to be very uplifting. I don't know if you're getting the drift of where Solomon was at, but I want you to know this. It's the result of backsliding. It's a result of one who knew the Lord and turned away. Of the people in this world, those who turn away are the most miserable. I went back to the world once. Went back to the old things I used to do. There was nothing there for me. Jeremiah says that, you know, those who turn away from trusting in the Lord will be like a bush in the desert, in a salt flat. And I can honestly say that if anything good happened to me when I was backslidden, I could not have enjoyed it. And yet all the bad had such a total impact on me. I would say I had a philosophy. If anything good happened, I go, well, don't get excited. It ain't going to last. When something bad happened, this is life. This is what it really is. And the full impact would hit me. The negative, horrible things that drag you down were the only real thing in my life when I was away from Christ. And when you come back to Christ and you walk with the Lord, he says you'll be like a tree planted by the water whose roots go down and won't be troubled in the drought. You see, it's a complete opposite. Bad things happen to you and you just go, don't worry, it's not going to last. Which is what I always said to good things before. And when good things come, man, you can soak them up. And I never enjoyed surfing until long after I was saved. Surfing to me was like I was always looking for a better wave, less got frustrated with the crowds. I just couldn't, you know, just everything was like, man, the waves are great today. There's too many people. Let's run down here. We were all over the place and driving ourselves crazy. And we lived for surfing. And it made us miserable. Because when the waves were perfect, everybody knew about it. And they were all at the beach and it was crowded. And, you know, it's no big deal to me anymore. You know, it's just like, wow. I can remember days going out and having everything I always wanted and just enjoying it. Not because I live for it, but since I've been a pastor, I've had days going out where I couldn't believe how God blessed me. And just to be able to enjoy it. One day I went down, and I got down about, you know, it was still a little bit dark when I was paddling out. It was just right at the break of day, and I got out and couldn't really tell what it was like. I could see there was some size to it. And I got out, and it was about between 5 and 7 foot waves coming in. Perfect shape, and for me it was the best surf I ever had, and not one person ever showed up. I had it to myself all morning, and when I finally got so tired I couldn't paddle anymore, went in, a crowd showed up. And I'm just going, see, before it was the opposite. Now that I don't live for it, God will give it to you, you can enjoy it, and then you can put it away. If you don't have it, you just enjoy what's next. You know, you can just soak it up. But apart from God, listen to what Solomon says. It's all vanity. To try to grab at these things for yourself is like grabbing at the wind. Try to take it and satisfy yourself in this life by your own effort. You're just grabbing at the wind. And when you give it up and say, Lord, I'll follow you. I'll even move somewhere where nobody surfs. I'll move to the desert. Whatever you want, God, it's yours. And then all of a sudden, when something good does come, it's like being a little kid and enjoying it in a whole different way. I've often said that Debbie and I, we've had a marriage where it's like we're two little kids and just enjoying each other. A lot of the complexities, once we both realized that neither one of us could make the other person happy, then we were both content in the Lord and we were both happy in Christ, then we enjoyed each other. When you were looking for that person to make you happy, you just made everybody miserable. And once you let it go, see, the more you hang on, the more you lose. The more you just let go and say, Jesus, you're what I want, the more you'll have. And so catch what Solomon's saying and remember he was backslidden. Let's stand for a closing word of prayer. Father, we thank you for this book, this statement of the emptiness of life without you, God, that he's driving it home in every aspect. There's nothing that escapes under the sun of being vanity and complete emptiness. And yet, Jesus, we know that when we live our lives in you, there is nothing, no matter how minor in our lives, that is empty. that you give all things meaning and purpose and direction. And Lord, without you, we would have nothing. Without you, there would be no purpose to get up tomorrow. But Lord, because of you, even what seems a mistake, what seems tragic, we know in our hearts that you're making all things beautiful in its time. Lord, help us to not live under the sun. In Jesus' name, amen.